You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm Smoking Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Time to light 'em if you got 'em. What is this week's smoking pick?
This is going to be a cigar by AJ Fernandez, the San Loteño Oval Maduro. Nicaraguan origin from the Tabacalera Fernandez factory. And as of right now, you know,
you actually pronounced that right too. I'm quite proud. I mean, it's
dude. I spent a week in Nicaragua. I should know my shizzle by now.
Yeah, this is a decent cigar. It's a Ecuadorian Habano Maduro wrapper, Nicaraguan binder, and the filler is a mix of Honduras, Nicaraguan, and AJ's secret filler, whatever that is.
The release date of the cigar was April 2nd of 2012, and I've received a cigar in some sampler packs, and this is the first one I've actually bought, you know, from a retail store. And I gotta say, this is a lot better smoke, you know, being in properly humidified versus being mailed to me from whatever state it came from. And
yeah, it was rated a 93 in Cigar Aficionado's list. And it's a weird looking cigar too, because the oval shape
of it is crazy.
It's almost like a box press, but it's not squared. It's like a real thin oval. So yeah, it's I might have trouble fitting it in your cutter.
Yeah, holding it in your hand though, it fits so perfectly. Like, I mean, it just has an awesome feel because I guess both sides are flat, and
yeah,
I mean, it just rests so perfectly on, you know, pretty much any surface. So, but you know, right here, you know, being in the first third, definitely getting some, you know, pretty peppery notes from this. Maybe some leather style taste in here.
Yeah, it's not as dark as some of the Maduros
very smooth draw behind it though.
Yeah,
I mean it's almost like smoking, you know, air as smooth as this thing's drawing. So I mean, damn good cigar. I mean, naturally, I'm pairing it with a Guinness, which is most of the time what I'm going to when I'm having a stogie. But
yeah, I'm enjoying it so far, and we will definitely be back with our final thoughts on it since we got called out last week for not giving a review of the cigar we were smoking. Shout out to Kevin Hogue for pointing that out.
Yep. So if you want to skip over all of the, you know, crazy nerd talk and just fast forward to our final thoughts, just go ahead and go to the end of the nerd news segment and it'll be there waiting for you.
It's not an April Fool's joke. We promise we'll remember to do it this time. All right. And with that, we'll be right back with our Tales from the Crypt episode.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. It's time to get a little creepy up in here.
Yep, we got a great episode for the Goyles and what was it? The Boyles and Goyles.
Boyles and Ghouls.
Yeah, that was it.
If you haven't figured it out by now, we're talking about one of the greatest horror TV show franchises, at least, Tales from the Crypt.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a throwback to the early 90s for me.
Even like early that, was it started in like, what,
1970 or something? If you want to go back, you know, even to like the comics and, you know, well, hell, I think the comics were started back in the, what, like the 50s or some shit. Yeah. And then, you know, we had the two original movies released in the 70s and then the TV series and then a couple more movies come out in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, I've always been a huge horror fan, and Tales from the Crypt was one that, you know, like I said, even as a, you know, probably 10 when that stuff came out.
Yeah, well, I mean,
even then, like, I was like, I was hooked on it.
You know, it's crazy for me going back and rewatching this stuff after getting a hold of the DVDs and everything else of the seasons, because growing up, I never had cable. So if everything didn't come over the air antenna, like, I don't know, maybe it was ABC or possibly Fox. I forgot. It was like Saturday nights at midnight, they would air like 2 back-to-back episodes of Tales from the Crypt. So I never got to see the uncensored version. So I was quite surprised at all the nudity and gore and language that
I
never got
to
experience.
We'll get to that when we talk about the actual show. And I've got a great story of how I first found Tales from the Crypt. But if you go back to the original, where it all came from, it was, let's say, post-World War II and stuff, you know, back when before superheroes and stuff was, like, super popular. True crime, horror, that's what comic books were about back then.
Yep.
And, you know, people wanted a little bit more adult content in their, you know, people would read comics like they read books. So in 1950... Well, even before that, EC Comics is where the term Tales from the Crypt comes from. But they had a true crime series called Crime Patrol. And the guys who you know, ran EC Comics and wrote that, William Gaines and Al Fieldstein, kind of decided to do a couple horror stories in their Crime Patrol book. And it got to the point where they were so popular, they were doing more horror stories than they were crime stories. So
crazy how people would become obsessed with the supernatural and the occult.
So they changed the book to Crypt of Terror for a couple issues, and then finally Tales from the Crypt. And it ran from 1950 to like 54, 55.
Yeah, to 55, and it looks like there were 27 issues, and it was released as a bi-monthly anthology, so...
Yeah,
I don't know. I'd like to see if there's any archives out there, if any of these old comics are still floating around.
They've re-released them several times. So I've got a couple Tales from the Crypt comics in my collection. There was also, because I said when Tales got so popular, they released several other titles. Vault of Horror, Haunt of Fear, and they had, was it something like Crime Suspense, something like that. But the... Haunt of Fear, Vault of Terror, and Tales of the Crypt were like the three big ones, and they all kind of shared hosts. So the Crypt Keeper, of course, was like the main host of Tales from the Crypt, but there was also the Old Witch and the Vault Keeper. And pretty much they, all three of them...
Hey, I got a joke for you.
What's that?
What do you call a witch that rides a motorcycle?
What?
Oh, what do you say when a witch rides a motorcycle? A vroomstick.
Go slap yourself now.
Hey, that was one of the Crypt Keeper's jokes, okay? So I had to work it in there. I mean, damn it.
Yeah. And the way the comics were, that, like I said, each of the various hosts would like present different stories, and they kind of had these weird competitions of who would come up with the most like fucked up stories. And the original Crypt Keeper in the comics was a person that's like some kind of creepy old man. And he started off like a very creepy old man, like the very early issues you look at. He's just this guy kind of peeking out of the, like, a door of a crypt. Like, he's like kind of mostly in darkness. And then as it went on, he became more of the comedic guy and would like make these horrible puns and jokes and stuff. Like you see the modern day Crypt Keeper on the TV show.
And
doing.
You tell me to go slap myself. I mean, we tell this is the guy that wrote the horrible puns, although they're timeless and they're classics. I love it.
Oh yeah.
But I didn't realize, you know, one of the things which I guess predating going back to the 1950 era, you know, all of the controversy and everything else surrounding, you know, the comic books, with people contributing, you know, to illiteracy, juvenile delinquency, you know, freaking,
yeah, this was all
parents,
pre-
clergymen, teachers, like everybody, you know, oh my God, you're doing the devil's work.
Yeah, this was all pre comic code. Like, you know, back in the Superman early Marvel stuff, you had the, comics code where they couldn't talk about monsters and, sex and violence and all this other stuff. Everything had to be, parental guidance suggested. And that's pretty much one of the reasons why Tales from the Crypt and all that went away is because, at this time in the, 55, they were having these Senate subcommittee hearings about, violence in comics and how they're making everybody evil and whatnot.
This is when we're getting our true taste of censorship, huh?
Yeah. And, the creators of Tales from the Crypt was like, fuck that, we're not going to water it down and try to make it fit your comics code. We're just going to stop doing it and go back to doing, whatever, crime tales or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be really curious to see, like you said, if they did reprints or something, to see if any comic book shops or anything can, still get a hold of this. I mean, even on Amazon, trying to find DVDs and stuff like that, it's not easy to find anything related to the Tales from the Crypt stuff.
The few I had, I got maybe four or five of the different titles, and I mean, the artwork on them was cool, and it's very much, just bloody, violent, and it's definitely not a kid's book. It will give you nightmares. And even has, these stupid jokes.
There's only one thing it gives
me
nightmares, and we won't talk about it on this podcast.
Freedom Tits?
No. It doesn't give me nightmares. No. It's absolutely stupid. All right, so whatever.
Scooby-Doo and the Rugland Werewolf?
There you go. That's the only thing I found that's ever given me nightmares. And I haven't tried it in my, adulthood yet, but I know, being 17, 18, I can remember watching that, movie or something with the girls and fucking having nightmares that night. I was like, God damn it.
The freaking original Evil Dead, gave me nightmares.
Yeah, it's weird. No actual horror movie or, anything of that nature has ever did it, but fucking little animated cartoon, man. I don't know. I guess it's something to do with my psyche. It's just...
Although,
not quite evil enough for me to,
I've got a good real life horror story for you. I was the other night. I'm laying in bed watching.
I was conceived.
No, I was watching Tales from the Crypt on my laptop doing my research, and I was looking at my phone, sending a text, and a freaking spider comes down from the ceiling and gets right between my face and my phone. So we just kind of illuminated by my phone out of the darkness. And, I end up, throwing my phone across the room trying to, freaking kill the spider.
So, what would the Crypt Keeper, have to say in that scenario? I mean...
Probably some bad pun about hanging around.
Either hanging around, maybe Web of Lies. I don't know. That's one for the ventriloquist. Or the writers. Whoever wants to do that.
Well, let's, jump forward in time a little bit. The TV series before that, we actually had two movies in 72 and 73.
Yep. The first film came out in 1972, actually titled Tales from the Crypt, and this was directed by Freddie Francis. And once again, these earlier movies were anthology films, so basically you got five separate segments based on stories from the comics. However, in this one, only two of the stories are actual Tales from the Crypt, base. So these were kind of weird for me to watch. I mean, like you said, going back to the comics, which I hadn't been exposed to, the Crypt Keeper was not the doll that I know the Crypt Keeper to be. It was a physical, being who was, older in age and everything.
Which is kind of like the actual comic book Crypt Keeper.
But I don't know. The thing for me for especially the first movie, Tales from the Crypt, was the religious overtones and everything else that were here. I mean, this is basically, we talked, in some of our slasher films episode about, morality and things of that nature. So, here we see, the adulterer, the murderer, and, people with just bad intentions in general, with just really, bad things happening to them. You're trying to scare people into heaven. Yeah.
In the 70s, it's The Virgin's the only one that survives the horror movie. that's kind of an early rule that was created, and then the second movie, Vault of Horror, which was another one of the EC titles, was basically the same thing. I think it had a few less stories or whatever in it.
Yeah, and it's weird, too, that, you know, these are all British films. Really? So, you know, the accents, the scenery, and I guess just the overall dialogue and everything. I mean, going from the TV shows as I know them backwards in a step in time, it was a bit of a culture shock.
That in the, because especially you go back and watch a lot of these 70s like sci-fi films and horror stuff. A lot of that stuff was filmed in England for, I guess it was cheaper or whatever. So I have this theory that in the future, everyone's going to be British. Because, like, every, like, you know, futuristic movie you see, like, the people have, like, English accents because it was all filmed in, like, I mean, even, like, most of the original, like, Star Wars, like, the Imperial guys are all, like, English dudes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess, how do you want to do this, Joe? I mean, do you want to give us, you know, basically a brief rundown of the five segments, or, you know, just tough?
I actually have not been able to watch those movies, so you're the one that actually
pulled up here. So, you know, basically the going back to the first movie, the first segment is called The Vault of Horror. I think this is based on comic number 35, and basically, you know, this lady kills her husband on Christmas Eve, and as she prepares to hide his body, she hears a radio announcement stating that a homicidal maniac
is
on the loose.
So that was in, like, the movie?
Yes.
Because I seen that story redid for an actual episode of Tales from the Crypt later on.
Yes, this was actually, you know, in the movie. Like I said, you know, when we were talking off air, a lot of the things get recycled throughout the movies, the TV shows. Like, I saw a couple of different scenarios, like the story of the monkey's paw, I guess. Like, that's referenced in, like, three different episodes that you could tie that to. But basically, you know, this homicidal maniac is on the loose, dressed up as Santa Claus, and the lady's daughter, you know, it's like, Mommy, has Santa arrived yet? Blah, blah, blah. So she's anticipating actual Santa Claus. So when this guy dressed like Santa knocks on the window, the daughter lets her in. Basically, the murderer intern gets murdered.
Yeah. That's pretty much how it played out in the TV episode as well.
Reflection of death. This one here is basically a guy abandons his family to be with another woman. And as they drive off together, they're involved in a car accident. The guy wakes up in the wrecked car and attempts to hitchhike home, but no one, you know, will stop for him. And then arriving at home, she sees his wife with another man. He knocks on the door and she screams, basically slams the door in her face. And, you know, then he goes to, see the woman he was with, Susan, and find out that she is blind from the accident. And she said that, you know, this guy, Carl, you're proclaiming to be, died 2 years ago in the crash. So looking in a reflective tabletop, he basically sees, you know, himself, and he's a corpse, and he wakes up to find that it was all a dream. But the moment he does, the crash occurs as it did, you know, in the movie. And, you know, it's quite interesting, you know, just to basically see people really foreshadow their own death and wake up like, huh, I really didn't die, and lo and behold, nope, actually, you're dead now. The second one was Poetic Justice, and this one here, we've got Edward Elliott and his son James, and they're, you know, basically a snobbish pair who resent their neighbor, the garbage man, author, and, you know, basically this guy owns a number of animals and, you know, invites children. This guy is overall a very good guy, but he doesn't have the nice yard and everything else. He's a hermit. The townspeople don't like him, and basically they come up with a plot to get rid of him. So they, you know, push, you know, to get rid of him as they see him as a blight on the neighborhood. They basically have his dogs confiscated, and then one by one, the dogs eventually reunite with him through some strange of events. And, you know, a persuading, you know, member of the council, you know, has him fired from his job, and, you know, all kinds of stories, you know, that are going to the children's parents about, you know, this guy being a, you know, basically a child molester. And then on Valentine's Day, this council sends a number of poison pen Valentine to the guy, and, you know, basically saying, oh, we hate you, we want you out of our neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. And then after that, you know, it's such a convoluted story that basically, you know, the townspeople kill the old man. Well, the old man comes back, you know, and basically gets revenge on the same people that tried to, you know, have him murdered and everything else.
Death by Murder Kroger?
Yeah, pretty much. Minus the Murdy Kroger. The second one, or the third film here is Wish You Were Here. This is one that we were talking about earlier that basically is the story of the monkey's paw. So you got a ruthless businessman, Ralph, who is basically in financial ruin, and his wife, you know, discovers some Chinese figurine that they've acquired over the years, and that it'll grant three wishes to whoever possess it. So, you know, basically the wife says, well, we're in a money bind, so let's wish for, you know, money. So basically they become rich. However, Ralph is killed on his way to the lawyer's office to collect, you know, the funds and everything. And then the lawyer advises the wife that she will inherit the fortune of her deceased husband, basically because of a life insurance plan. She uses her second wish to bring him back the way he was just before the accident, but learns his death wasn't due to a heart attack. Nope. Was due to a heart attack, not the actual accident. As she uses her final wish to bring him back alive to live forever, she discovers that he was embalmed. So basically, this corpse gets reanimated. He's in torturing, agonizing pain, and she tries to kill him. However, since she wished that he would live forever, his dismembered body, head, and everything else is just basically in the casket, screaming in agony.
Yeah, nothing ever good happens in a Tales from the Crypt story. But if people want to find out more about this stuff, they can definitely watch it. But yeah, these anthology movies, that's something we've not really seen in like a long time. Like, no one really does like an anthology movie anymore that
I can remember. I think the closest that I've seen to it in recent times was basically, you know, Grindhouse and some of the stuff they did. But even then, I wouldn't consider that anthology.
That was like a full, that was just a double feature movie. I mean, but I remember like 70s, early 80s, there were several of these movies that were just a collection of short stories. Like for one that was kind of inspired, but it wasn't a Tales from the Crypt product, but it was kind of inspired by Tales from the Crypt, was the Creepshow series. Do you ever remember seeing those?
The Creepshow series, I've seen bits and pieces
of those. They were actually directed by George A. Romero from Night of the Living Dead, and they were written by Stephen King. And it was like, you know, this collection of these short horror stories, kind of like the Tales from the Crypt movies. And I remember some of those were, there's one that I remember where a lady like hits a hitchhiker and then like just drives off, and like the dead hitchhiker keeps like following her. And like every time it seems, she's like, tries to get her, like, thanks for the ride, lady. And she, like, just, like, ends up, like, running over him, like, a whole bunch of times trying to kill him. And it just keeps, like, every time she stops, it shows up again, like, thanks for the ride, lady.
It's a never-ending cycle. Yeah. I don't know. The last short story on the first film was probably one of the ones that I was, like, and we see this once again in kind of multiple things. But basically, you got a group of blind people, and, you know, they've got, they're in a home for the blind, and there's this, you know, guy that oversees the home. Well, he's not using any of the funds or anything. It's neglecting all of these people who are elderly and older in age. And he's like, oh, they're just blind. They're dumb. Well, he's got this big-ass German Shepherd. And all the food and everything, it should be fed to, you know, the residents of the house. He's basically feeding to the dog to keep it calm, docile, and content. So the blind people all mass together and lock the dog downstairs in a cellar in one room, the guy in another room, and then they all build like this cattle herd that's lined with freaking razor blades on the inside. So, you know, after about a week of not feeding the dog nor the man, you know, they open both doors. Well, the guy stumbles out. Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, we'll just let people see the movie and they can figure out the rest. But I was like, damn, that's, you know.
Damn. Yeah, and
don't fuck with the blind, all right? Nothing good comes out of it, out of the movies, out of any of the episodes that deal with the blind people. Like, yeah, they're going to get their vengeance on you.
Oh, yeah, there was an episode of the TV series that reminds me of that. We'll talk about it in a minute. What did you think of the two 70s movies compared to the modern interpretation that we all know?
I mean, you definitely didn't. I mean, they were gory. I mean, and everything. I mean, I found them to be watchable. Like I said, it was just going into it blind without any precursor as to what I was about to get myself into with the British, you know, overtone and everything. I was just, you know, I was kind of taking a step back, but, you know, they captivated my attention, and I was like, all right, you know, some of the humor and the puns that we see in the TV shows were missing from it, but, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to knock them. You know, I can definitely see the stepping stones into the modern Tales from the Crypt from those. So I gain a certain appreciation just from that aspect that without these films and the comics, would Tales from the Crypt as we know it be what it is?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely set the base for what was later to come later. Another anthology movie I just remember. Remember, you ever see Tales from the Hood?
Yes.
Oh, because that reminded me, like, very much of that, where these guys, like, go to, like, a funeral home to buy drugs, and the funeral guy's taking them around, showing them all the different dead people and telling them the story of how the person died, and then turns out, like, the four dudes who was there to buy drugs were dead themselves, and they were really in hell. I mean, it was weird as shit, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, and you saw that with the original, you know, Tales from the Crypt. Like, I honestly think that the Crypt, you know, in most of the 70s movies, I mean, that was basically the rendition of, you know, what most people would attribute to hell being.
Yeah. Well, let's jump forward another decade to 1989.
And what happened in 1989, Joe?
We finally got the HBO Tales from the Crypt. The version of Tales from the Crypt that most of us, you know, knew and grew up on.
Yay for boobies. Boobies, gore, lust, gluttony. I mean, deadly sins rolled up into one anthology.
I mean, we got seven seasons from it. It ran from 1989 to 1996.
Yes.
And, I mean, this was a revolutionary show for its time because it was, you know, on HBO, so there was no, you know, censorship that you get on regular TV. So they allowed everything, you know, bloody, bloody violence, foul language, sex, nudity, you know, everything rolled up into this, you know, these short, you know, 30-minute horror movies.
And for you folks that are, you know, I guess with all the new TV ratings and everything, this would be equivalent to your TV MA.
It probably works than that, because I mean, it would not be on like regular TV.
No, I mean
even like AMC.
With no, I mean, you would still have to tone down, you know, the nudity. I mean, like I said, had I been exposed to the HBO version of Tales from the Crypt, my younger childhood would have been much more different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of how I saw it originally, because we had like the
is that the first time you saw the live-action movies on TV?
The non-legal cable hookup. Somehow, when they hooked up their cable, they screwed up something and left us like all the movie channels but never charged us for it. So we had like free HBO for like years growing up. And I don't sleep much anyway. So as like, you know, a kid, I would sneak downstairs and like watch freaking late-night HBO and watch freaking Tales from the Crypt. That's probably why I'm so messed up today, and my love of all things horror is from, like, you know, seeing like the original unedited Tales from the Crypt when I was way too young to be watching that sort of thing.
Whatever, dude. I would say perfectly normal, perfectly healthy.
That's because you haven't found the bodies in my basement.
I've been in your basement. I've seen the zombie door. There's no doubt in my mind that probably under that concrete slab are bodies. Are zombies.
If they're there, it was before I bought the house. I know nothing of them. I've not added to them, at least.
That's what they all say.
I mean, this show was produced by, like, big Hollywood directors at the time. I mean, Richard Donner, Joel Silver from, you know, I mean, hell, Richard Donner, Goonies, Superman, Joel Silver, Lethal Weapon, Robert Zemeckis, freaking, you know, Forrest Gump, and I mean, these guys are huge directors and writers, and they made this little horror show for HBO.
I mean, I think that was one of the things that made Tales from the Crypt so awesome is, you know, going back now, like, and seeing so many of the episodes, and I mean, you got a lot of A-list actors that, yeah, you know, had started here, and then you got other folks that, you know, were probably just a blip on the radar when Tales from the Crypt are around, but now you fast forward 20 years later, and dude, they're blown up as YouTube stars, and you know, on freaking sitcoms, are in, you know, actual A movies and stuff. So I guess that dynamic is one of the things that made Tales from the Crypt so great.
I mean, that was one. I mean, the pretty much every episode there was a known actor at the time, and there was even some several like big name actors too. I mean, you saw, well, Steve Buscemi, freaking Demi Moore.
I mean, you had freaking
Meatloaf.
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, Dan. Kirk Douglas, and that was an episode I watched recently that that kind of it was weird that I really liked, and it didn't even make like the top 10 list of when I was looking at some like suggested episodes, but it had Kirk Douglas and Dan Aykroyd, and it was a World War II story. I mean, a World War I story. But it looked like a legit war movie. I mean, it looked like you were watching, you know, Saving Private Ryan or something. Because and this was like one of the very few episodes I watched that had nothing supernatural about it. You know, there was no monsters or zombies or anything. It was a story of a guy that basically he was a coward and deserted and got his whole platoon killed. So he, you know, they charged him with desertion and cowardice and was going to have him executed. But his father was like the big general. So he tells them that, like, you're not going to die. I load all the guns. I'm going to load them all with blanks and leave you, like, a pack because we're supposed to move out. So right after we execute you, we're going to take off. So no one's going to really check to make sure you're dead. Just, you know, sneak off afterward. And he said, but just do me one thing, you know. Everybody thinks you're a coward. Act like a man when you face the firing squad because you're not going to die. You know, just act like a man. And, you know, and then, you know, he, you know, actually executes him. But, you know, he thinks he's not going to die. So he's, like, you know, kind of like, you know, all big and bold. So yeah, after, you know, his son died, you know, he can look at everybody. He's like, yeah, my son really wasn't a coward. Yeah. There's like nothing supernatural whatsoever about that story, but it was a
noble
cool
thing you could do, you know.
Yeah.
These are the times that try men's souls.
Yeah. I mean, and I was thinking the production quality too on that show was all, I mean, it looked like short, a lot of them looked as well. Season one might have been a little bit iffy, but
well,
but
I mean,
as it went along, I mean,
well,
it looked like legit.
About, you know, movies. Tales from the Crypt is like you said. You know, that in the first few seasons, it really wasn't about the supernatural or anything of that nature. I mean, it was more or less these are real world situations, and you know, the lack of CGI and everything else. Yeah. I mean, that just, you know, put that much more pressure on, you know, the actors, actresses, producers, and everybody. I mean, they didn't have a lot of the modern tools then that they do today. And
yeah, but all the practical horror effects too were always excellent. I mean, it was like, you know, some serious, like what you'd see in a serious big budget horror movie, but in like, you know, a 30-minute TV show every week.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost, you know, I mean, I guess to attribute it to modern times. I mean, you know, now we've got, you know, freaking Greg Nicotero and, you know, his special effects and stuff on The Walking Dead and all the things that he's doing there. And, you know, I mean, we wind 20 years and, you know, you have that same level of Hollywood production, like you said, in these 30-minute, you know, TV episodes.
That too, and the one of the things too that was amazing about it is the number of big stars that like we said that were in these episodes. It kind of since like I said it was big directors that were running the thing, so they were able to get in A-list stars, but also it kind of gave a place for people to come and experiment. You know, they don't want to get typecast as a horror movie actor, but they can go do a, you know, a one episode of Tales from the Crypt and kind of play or, you know, try it out and, you know, without having to commit.
Something, I guess, you know, the equivalent to have fun with to get from the, you know, mundane monotony of, all right, this is how you're going to act and, you know, you're going to be known for this role. So you got a way to step outside, I guess, your comfort zone and just have fun.
Movies just take so long to make. I mean, you commit to a movie, your schedule's tied up for at least a year probably. But, you know, they can go spend a week or 2 weeks filming a Tales from the Crypt and try something different that they're not normally, you know, involved in. Like, one of the big ones that like I said, I remembered it from a kid, and I completely forgot it was a Tales from the Crypt episode until I watched it again with Christopher Reeve. I mean, we all know him as the original Superman, but he did an episode of Tales from the Crypt. It was him, Meatloaf, and Judd Nelson from, like, you know, Breakfast Club and all that.
Yeah, I mean, this was season four, and that episode you're talking about is called What's Cooking.
Yeah, and Christopher Reeve owns this... He decided to start a restaurant that was served squid only, and it basically almost went bankrupt. Well, this kind of drifter guy...
Which is weird, because I'm a big fan of squid. I mean, love calamari, so... Yeah.
Well, Meatloaf is his landlord, and is, like, threatening to, like, kick them out if they don't if they don't pay the back rent. Well, this drifter guy that they gave, like, a job, like, washing tables or whatever, said, hey, I'll give you my super secret barbecue recipe, and I guarantee that'll get you... you know, customers, you just gotta let me do all the cooking. Well, you know, the restaurant gets huge, and turns out what it is, he basically killed Meatloaf and made real meatloaf out of him, and he's been serving people like barbecued people. And then once Christopher Lee finds out, he's like, you know, kind of torn, because he's like, I really don't want to be a part of killing all these people, but I'm making a shitload of money now for serving man meat. And
I guess, you know, fast forward, you know, to what? When was it? House of a Thousand Corpses, Captain Spaulding, yeah. You know, freaking, you know, roadside fried chicken.
Yeah, that was an episode that really, like I said, really kind of showed a character that you're not used to seeing in that role.
I mean, there's one episode, and I still have not run across it. I don't know what season it's in or anything. I just remember, you know, somebody getting tossed into, you know, a big-ass tree chipper head first, and you just see all the body parts just, like, fly out the other end. And I remember it being on a Tales from the Crypt episode, so I'm hoping that at some point I'm going to stumble across it.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that one yet, but there's one. That's another thing about these Tales from the Crypt episodes. It was almost a morality tale. You could always... Just about every episode, it was somebody is doing something greedy, or, you know, trying to force somebody to love them, or trying to screw someone over, and they always get their, you know, just desserts in the end, whether it's something supernatural, the person they killed or screwed over comes back to get them, or something happens to them and they end up getting killed or arrested before they can even, you know...
I mean,
or the
for
person...
me, Tales from the Crypt is just a fine example of karma. Or in some instances, maybe even Darwinism.
Like, for example, you're talking about Don't Mess with the Blind People. There's one episode I watched where a guy is a lumberjack, and his boss is, like, super jealous that anybody looks at his wife. So the wife kind of tries to seduce the kid and then claim that, oh, no, he came on to me. So the dude beats the shit out of the kid and, like, ends up – kid goes in – he gets beat so bad he's blind. So the other – the other guys at the lumber company teach them how to use a chainsaw, you know, but just by, you know, feel. Well, they get the boss and his wife and tie them up and gag them and put them inside a hollowed out tree and let the blind guy cut up the tree.
Yeah, I mean,
so he has like no idea that they're there because he can't see, and just ends up chopping up the people that had abused him.
I mean, you know, for me, it goes back to one of the lines that, you know, from the early 70s film is, yeah, the blind can't see, but guess what? Our lack of vision, that only heightens all of our other senses.
And the flip side of that, if it wasn't someone getting, like I said, screwed over and stuff happening to him, it was the opposite. It was, like I said, the pro morality tale where the star of the story, you see the good guy and he's like being oppressed by all these, you know, people or circumstances or whatever, and then he ends up, you know, being the hero at the end, and the people that are, you know, trying to screw him over end up getting, you know, the bad shit happening to him. So it was kind of like, you know, if you're a bad person, bad shit's going to happen to you. If you're a good person, good stuff's going to happen to you.
Well, I don't know. You know, there was always one episode that I watched most recently, and I think it was in season five or something, but you basically have, you know, this detective, and, you know, apparently this detective and some other guy, well, their wives apparently are having an affair together. So the detective ends up framing one of the wives' husbands. You know, he basically kills his wife, and in turn also ends up killing the detective's wife. And the detective flips the story that you killed both wives. And, you know, basically the detective gets off the hook scotch-free, and you don't really see that in any other episodes.
Oh, there's like, I mean, and another thing that was amazing, it was always, did not take itself seriously. I mean, it was always very self-referential. I mean, I remember there's one episode where it shows the actual writing of the Tales from the Crypt comic books. And the main character is the actor Harry Stone. It was on like Night Court and stuff. And he is the artist for Tales from the Crypt. And he's got this wife that just like completely is a bitch to him all the time and makes him take these experimental fertility pills. They're trying to have a kid. Well, whatever he does screws with his mind, and now everything he draws comes to life. So all these monsters and stuff he's drawing in Tales from the Crypt comics start coming to life and like taking out the people that are that are oppressing him. And he ends up, monster eats his wife, and he ends up falling, running off with the girl at the end and having a happy ending. But I mean, the whole episode, they're in like the Tales from the Crypt, comic book offices, and you even see the Crypt Keeper puppet sitting in a chair in the corner of the room through the whole episode.
Well, I thought it was cool in some of the DVD extras. It was actually, about a 12-13 minute segment where it's a Crypt Keeper and he's actually reading to you from the comic. So, I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, let's talk about the man himself. Yeah, because I think that's the other thing. It's not Tales from the Crypt without the Crypt Keeper.
No, I mean,
voiced by John Cassick. Yeah, John Cassick or Cassie, however you pronounce that name. But yeah, that dude was. I mean, he was the voice of the Crypt Keeper through the whole thing, and even all like some of the spinoff stuff. And
I mean, I think, the intros with the Crypt Keeper and all of his puns and everything else. Yeah,
just a dead comedian. I mean, that's what you like. He's like a bad, like 70s comedian who has become a demon. Cause I mean, his jokes they're like the worst dad jokes that, these serious hardcore puns. But being told by this little, like half rotten corpse, the guy, they were absolutely hilarious. If anybody else told those jokes, you would like call them an idiot. But the fact that he's telling them just makes it even better.
Well, I mean, it's always foreshadowing into the story and everything else. I mean, one of the lines, from one of the movies we'll talk about is the Crypt Keeper saying, "Fasten your drool cups and ready your vomit bags. We're going to the movies. Frights, camera, action." I mean, just, dude. I mean, it's such an awesome play on words, and yeah. it is lyrical genius.
And that's another one, too. I mean, those as the seasons progressed, too, the Crypt Keeper intros and outros got more and more elaborate. Like, the first couple seasons, it's just him and his crypt, making his jokes and reading from the book. But then, like, as the later season going on, there's, like, whole scenarios where it's, like, kind of based on whatever the story is going to be about. They're doing about a medical thing. He's like, in surgery, operating on a corpse or whatever. And it just keeps
getting
bigger and bigger, like every episode.
Well, I think, one of the ones that stood out to me is basically, it pans in first person. So first person, you're in front of the Crypt Keeper, and basically the Crypt Keeper is judge, jury, and executioner.
Yeah. And he's always
he's
talking,
like, talking to the camera. Yeah. He's like, "How do you plead?" And it's like, guilty as charged or something, and the camera pans its head, no and everything. So I mean, it's like, that's awesome for its time. Like, you don't have TV shows, I mean, yeah, even with social media and things,
and it was
of that
always
nature,
as if he was like your creepy uncle telling you a story. He always referred to the audience as kiddos or kitties,
kitties and
boils and ghouls or whatever freaky thing he called you that week. But it was always like,
hell of a
tongue twister. He was telling a story.
Hell, there was one episode, and he's sitting around a poker table and everything, and I thought it was awesome because they're all sitting around smoking cigars. I was like, hell yeah.
There's one episode, and I can't remember the name of it right offhand, but it's about these two gamblers that they're basically going back and forth at each other. It's called Cutting Cards. And these two rival gamblers end up in the same city, and so they decide to have a bet. Whoever and they start playing Russian roulette to begin with to see which one of them's going to have to leave town. Well, turns out the gun doesn't work, so neither one of them dies. So after that, they start playing cutthroat poker, where they play a hand of poker, and whoever loses, they cut off a finger. And until one of them gives
wager,
up.
Wager, man. I've been in some high intense poker games, but
I mean, they keep going back and forth to what. And by the end of it, they're like in a hospital, like no legs, like one arm, still playing. The game has not stopped. They both refuse to give up. They just keep chopping off parts. And I mean, there's episodes that are like we're talking about it being self-referential. I mean, I remember one episode where it shows the origin story of the Crypt Keeper. Where this like circus freak ends up falling in love with a mummy and steals the mummy and I guess has sex with it, and the Crypt Keeper is the result, and you see this little baby Crypt Keeper at the end
of
the episode.
Is that the one where he's like, you know, now, you know, an episode that's truly near and dear to my heart, yeah, or something like
shows
that.
He's like, yeah, it shows the origin story of one of my favorite horror icons or whatever. And there's like this little baby Crypt Keeper at the end of the episode. It was called Lower Birth. It was just weird as shit. But I mean, it also won several awards for some of their episodes. I know Tim Curry actually got several Emmys for his episode called let me scroll back to where that is. Death of Some Salesman, where he put it's got what's his name? Ed Begley Jr. plays a salesman that and there's this hillbilly inbred like family that basically kills anybody that tries to con them or
oh yeah, I just watched that one. Just a
Tim
few
Curry
before we
plays
recording,
like
actually.
The entire family. He plays like three different parts in this episode. He plays like the husband, the wife, the grandma, like the entire family is all Tim Curry in various like makeups, and they won like several awards for that episode. So it's definitely not just some, you know, some weird thing. And we talked about all the big name actors and stuff that got attracted to it. It also attracted, you know, they nearly had like a different director almost every episode. And there was several like, you know, big name Hollywood directors that, you know, kind of got their start on Tales from the Crypt or, you know, wanted to try something new and came to Tales from the Crypt. So every episode is like almost like a completely different look. Because it's almost like, you know, nobody does it. Arnold Schwarzenegger even directed a couple episodes and made a cameo as the Crypt Keeper's trainer.
That's
Michael
awesome.
J. Fox directed some episodes. Like I said, the big producers, Donner, Robert Zemeckis, all those guys had their turn at directing episodes. There's even one episode I read about it. It was one of the few that they actually used CGI in it to put characters in there that had been long dead. I mean,
yes.
The story has a cameo from...
yeah, and I don't think you saw the CGI stuff until, like, 95 or something.
Yeah.
Like, it was very late in the, you know, TV series run.
Because this one actually had Humphrey Bogart and... what's the other guy? The big horror movie guy. Alfred Hitchcock.
Yep.
Yeah.
Humphrey Bogart.
And Alfred Hitchcock, and both of them had long been dead before they appeared in this episode, but it was one that Zemeckis had directed, and it was right after he had done Forrest Gump. And, you know, they did all that where they, you know, imposed, like, you know, Tom Hanks into, like, old historical footage and stuff, so he wanted to, like, come play with that on Tales from the Crypt when he directed the episode. So, I mean, there's a lot of revolutionary stuff came out of the series.
Yeah, I mean, that was the last episode of season 6.
And every episode, except for one, were based on stories from the various comic books. I mean, so there's only one that's like an original, and it's like, I think it's like the very final episode, and it was also the only animated episode they did.
Yeah, and anybody that's, you know, wanting to go back, you could basically forget that season 7 existed. Unless you're truly a hardcore, you know, collector or something.
Completist,
forget,
you gotta see it all.
Forget season 7 ever happened.
Well, after this wrapped up, we got two movies out of it. The first one being Demon Knight from, what, 95?
Well, I think Demon Knight was in 95 because Bordello of Blood was a year later in 96. So you got Demon Knight, basically directed by Ernest Dickerson, had Billy Zane, William Sadler, and, you know, it's basically a full feature-length film, and...
And that was what's great about it. It looked like a super long episode of Tales from the Crypt. It started with the regular TV intro and a pre-show Crypt Keeper scene. So it was almost just like a hour and a half long episode of Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, and it's awesome. So, I mean, the graphics and everything else were a little bit cheesy at times, but overall, you know,
There's only one part that I really can't stand in that movie is because most of the time, the puppeteers responsible for the Crypt Keeper were amazing. I'm taking six guys to control him. But you never see him like really moving around a whole lot, or he's always like behind something so you don't see his legs. And in that, the intro scene for that one, he's like directing the film and he gets up out of his chair and runs to the set to yell at somebody. And that was either a guy in a suit or like the worst like CGI on a freaking green screen. It did not look like the Crypt Keeper. And you know, for the rest of the movie, the rest of the scenes, it all looked like the traditional Crypt Keeper. That one segment where they show him like jump up out of a chair and run to the set, I'm like, that just did not look right. It just like took me out of the movie. I'm like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Go back to the puppet. The puppet looked better.
But yeah, that intro scene with the Crypt Keeper has got some freaking awesome quotes and stuff like that. And I mean, I would encourage anybody
John
to go Lerquette, out and check
who is
out
the guy he's yelling at in that scene too. So, you talked about William Sadler being like the main guy pretty much in Bemis Night. It's kind of cool because he was in the very first episode of Tales from the Crypt, the man that was Death. He played the guy who ran the electric chair. And then once they outlawed executions in that state, he started killing criminals that were like getting off. And, electrocuting himself because he couldn't give up electrocuting people. And then he ends up getting finally caught. And they actually bring back the electric chair after he gets arrested. So he ends up getting fried himself. But yeah, he was in the very first episode. And then he was that. And then he's also in, which it's hard to tell it's him, in the second movie, Bordello of Blood. Because he plays a part in the Crypt Keeper intro where he's like a mummy.
You definitely see some recycling of characters, you know, throughout the course of the Crypt history, excuse me. I think that's another thing that just makes the show fun. I mean, you see that a lot with Doctor Who, right? You think this character's killed off. Well, then they do a flashback. Or, nope, not really dead. We're still here.
The original Demon Knight was so good. I mean, the soundtrack, the whole storyline was, you know, I loved it. And then Bordello of Blood was just... Demon Knight was kind of true to the horror aspect of Tales from the Crypt, and Bordello of Blood was true to the nakedness and sex scenes.
It was everything, you know, vampire violence, gore, language, nudity. I mean, I don't know. You know, this movie actually received, I think it was like, only received like a 15% rating or something like that on Rotten Tomatoes.
It made no money. I liked it. I think it did a lot better on like on home video, but it bombed in the box office. But I mean, the whole base storyline is this TV preacher wants to get rid of sinners, so he brings back the mother of all vampires, and she starts a vampire whorehouse and lures sinners in and eats the customers of her vampire whorehouse.
See, I don't know that I would ever get to experience that. You know, I don't know for sure, but I think I might be, you know, semi-claustrophobic when it comes to coffins and stuff. So having to take a coffin ride through the, you know, crematory down to where the bordello is, I mean, I might opt out just right there. Like,
And this one also starred Dennis Miller as like the protagonist of the movie. And I was always a fan for him for Saturday Night Live and his comedy. So, I mean, I thought Bordello Blood was, you know, if Demon Knight was closer to the horror aspect, Bordello Blood was closer to the comedic effect of Tales from the Crypt.
I mean, I think Bordello of Blood was just an opportunity to see how over the top they can make it. I mean,
originally supposed to be a trilogy, but like I said, those were the only two that really got released. The third movie called, I think, Ritual. It never got released in the States. It got released international without the Crypt Keeper intros, and I think they eventually released it on video with the Crypt Keeper parts restored, but I have never seen that. I may have to go pick that up on video just to see how bad that that one is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just talking about actors and stuff like that, you know, one of the episodes I want to give a shout out to is in season 5, House of Horror. It's episode 59.
Will Wheaton episode?
Yeah, with Will Wheaton. And, dude, seeing Will Wheaton 20 years ago and, like, freaking whitey tidies as, you know, this guy trying to...
Yeah, there's a bunch of big, like, 90s era, like, young stars in that episode.
So, I mean, it also had Jason London in it and stuff. So, I mean, just seeing those guys, you know, go from, you know, freaking Tales from the Crypt and, I mean, not knowing much about all of their acting and filmography and everything else, but it's just freaking awesome to go back and see almost like where are they now?
Yeah, and I always forget, like, you see beardless Will Wheaton, it's like, yeah, he looks like he's 12.
Yeah, I mean, if not for the voice, I would not at all have, you know, recognized it until... And that was the other thing, like, even with the credits rolled and stuff like that, you didn't see, you know, all the big actors and stuff like that, you know, roll through the credits and stuff, so... Yeah. I don't know, it's almost like you said, you know, they were doing it for fun, not necessarily to, you know... do it to increase their exposure or anything, but
I mean, and then it like had like several little spinoffs too. I mean, they released 3 albums. They had the original,
which are all freaking awesome.
Yes,
because I used to have a copy of the Christmas album.
Yeah, the Christmas, I had that too. I don't know what happened to it. I need to like go download a copy of it.
I know what happened to mine. Same thing that happens to all of my CDs. And the reason the biggest pitfall for me that I miss about cassette tapes and stuff, dude, you could pick up a cassette tape, you could throw it across the room, you could soak it in Coca-Cola or whatever, you just rinse it off with some water, it would continue to play. CDs, DVDs, on the other hand, they're a nightmare for me.
Oh yeah, the Christmas rap, I think we played it on the show, one of our music things.
Yes.
We're talking about. Yeah, that was hilarious. But they had a soundtrack to the show too, that it had a Crypt Keeper rap, the Crypt Jam, Crypt Keeper full on like 90s gangster rap video where, I mean, he even looks like Eazy-E at one point in the video. It's absolutely hysterical. I think we'll play a little bit of that for you at the end of this, because it's... And then they even released in 2000 a, like, metal album called Monsters of Metal.
That one I've not heard, and, you know, I tried to find some of the albums and stuff, and unfortunately,
yeah,
I have not been able to find any legit copies. So if anybody might have some of the stuff floating around, they don't care to share with the cigar nerds, I would love to give that stuff a listen.
Yeah, because
those
make
some great party jams for Halloween parties.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this this metal album they did, but I mean, it had Black Sabbath, Megadeth, Pantera, like, you know, all these legit like metal bands with these little Crypt Keeper skits throughout. I mean, and then they like turned
so
it
was
into
it like a you know, Tales from the Crypt, Beavis and Butthead, like back when they did, you know.
I guess so.
Like, can we get a commentary? Dude, freaking, can we turn that into a TV series? We got the Crypt Keeper, you know, giving commentary over, you know, popular metal songs.
Yes.
Or something. Like, I want to hear the Crypt Keeper's take on emo.
Oh, yeah. And then it got really weird because they turned it into a Saturday morning cartoon series. I mean, it was still voiced by the Crypt Keeper, but it was definitely not as horrific as it as what we grew up on.
No, I mean,
but
it was ABC,
Tales from the Crypt
and,
Keeper.
You know, it was a freaking awesome. I mean, which this goes back. I remember my childhood where Saturday mornings you woke up early specifically for the cartoons and
yeah.
stuff. I mean, you know, and I can remember Tales from the Crypt, the animated series. We had Goosebumps. Like, there are all kinds of things that I feel like. Yeah, cartoons these days, you know, miss the ball on so much.
Yeah, we had, it was all right for people to scare kids back then. I mean, because we had like the Goosebumps series, which, you know, it, you know, wasn't, say, hardcore horror, but that, the Tales from the Crypt series, even the Are You Afraid of the Dark, stuff like that. I mean, nowadays it's all, you know, freaking Teletubbies or whatever, like, you know, this is like kids stuff is like really, really kiddie. Like, and in our day, it was a little bit more adult.
Yep, absolutely. So, I mean, just everything.
And after the cartoon series was over, he even got his own game show for a while, which I have never seen this, but just reading about it was, from what it sounds like kind of like the old Double Dare, if you remember that show, where it's like people do, it was Secrets of the Crypt Keeper's Haunted House. And it was this weird kids game show.
This was like a Fear Factor for kids.
For kids, yeah.
With the crypt twist. I could dig that. That's awesome. I mean, do you know if that was aired here in the U.S.?
Or? Yeah, it was on, I can't remember what channel it was on, but it was on the same channel as
probably
the cartoon
series.
Probably
one of those cable channels that I didn't get as a kid.
No, it was on like, you know, regular, you know, prime time. I'm not prime time, but, you know, regular network TV. It was, because apparently it was like after the animated series ended, that was like the next thing that they tried to do.
I wonder if maybe I had saw that at some point, just don't remember. I would be fascinated to try to find some of that stuff.
I think by the time that came around, I was like too old for, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, so I never...
You know what?
I was hungover. I was not awake that early to watch those shows when they were on.
I mean, it's weird, right? I mean, here we are, fucking in our 30s and everything, and now I'm finding myself wanting to go back and redig up all of those cartoons and stuff that at the time I took for granted, but now as a nerd, I'm like, damn it, that had so much significance in my life, and I just didn't appreciate it.
I mean, that's the thing with now that we, it was on from 96 to 97 was when the Crypt Keeper's Haunted House show was on. So that was like the year I graduated high school. So yeah, I was not getting up that early to watch a kid's game show. But yeah, that's the one thing I found like with Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff now is the old stuff that they have on there. Going back and watching some of this stuff from our childhood I mean, a lot of it still holds up. Some of the cartoon series may not, you don't want to go revisit, but I mean, a lot of these old shows and stuff just are still as good as, you know, you remember them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. It's just freaking nostalgia going back.
I mean, in this age of like reboots and remakes and stuff, I think it's time to bring the Crypt Keeper back. I mean, we've got like The Walking Dead and stuff. I mean, AMC could.
You got a lot of serious stuff, but you don't have a lot of light humor. Like, let's get away from the drama and everything. Let's make horror fun again.
All the stuff that AMC does, and whatever FX, like, you know, Sons of Anarchy, Justified, all these really what you would normally have to see on an HBO is now on regular TV. I say it's time to bring the Crypt Keeper back.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I mean,
dust off his old bones and put him back to work.
It's long overdue, my friend.
Well, I think that about wraps us up on Tales from the Crypt. Is there any final thing or final episodes you want to talk about before we get out of here?
I mean, my only thing is just trying to figure out that one episode that I have ingrained in my head, and that is driving me nuts. So, you know, we've spent a week for a week straight, I've watched nothing but Tales from the Crypt, and I haven't run across it yet.
I'm only up to season 4, so if I find it, I'll let you know. I'm still working my way through.
Like, I'm on Wikipedia here, like, trying to, you know, control F and find, you know, something to do with a wood chipper. And it's just not happening.
Yeah, it's just too vague for Google, man. You got to come up with a little bit more details, figure out who it was.
It's like having that song stuck in your head, and you can't remember any words. You just hear the beat, and you're, like, trying to figure out, you know, how to translate the beat into what lyrical content may be there or something. And
all right, folks. Well, we'll be right back with some Beer 30.
And stay tuned.
It's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And we're back with some Beer 30. What are we drinking today, Brad?
Today we are drinking the Burnt Hickory Brewery's The Fighting Bishop.
Yeah, Burnt Hickory is a new brewery that I didn't know about. It's a kind of a local brewery. It's in based in Kennesaw, Georgia. And the beer is named for a Civil War general that died not far from where the brewery is now located. He was named Leonidas Polk, an ordained bishop and Confederate general, nicknamed the Fighting Bishop.
Yeah, and this is going to be a Belgian triple spiced with green peppercorns. It's, you know, not as high gravity as some of the triples I've had, but, I mean, it definitely has a good full mouthfeel to it, and kind of a floral essence to it that is what it's taste.
Yeah, it's a Belgian triple, so it definitely has that floral, almost barley wine flavor to it. But the peppercorn kind of gives it just a little bit of a spicy aftertaste, too. I'm digging that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very good beer. What was the price point on this, Joe, where you found it?
I think it was like $10 for the big bottle. So it's not too expensive.
No, I mean, that's, you know, average beer price. And I don't know, man. I'm a big fan of just about anything Belgium. So whether it's a triple or a quad, I mean, it's right up my alley. So
yeah, it's 8.5% alcohol. And like I said, the big bottle is a pint and 6 ounces. So it's a definitely nice big bottle for your price. And, you know, pretty cool artwork on the bottle. May have to go up there and take the brewery tour and check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one thing that, you know, we keep talking about. I mean, we've, you know, talked about maybe doing Cherry Creek is, you know, actually trying to figure out a list of all the local breweries and stuff like that and see if we can't, you know, make it to some tasting rooms or some events and things.
Yeah, I definitely want to maybe check out the Monday Night Brewery, too. I tried some of their was it the...
Yeah, didn't we get one of their sampler packs or something for the weekend we were at NACRCon?
I got a six-pack of their Scotch Ale, which I think is like the Drafty Kilt.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, but I've tried them at some of the beer tastings and stuff we've gone to, but yeah, I've yet to go check out their brewery.
Yeah, speaking of beer tastings and stuff, looks like April, another pretty big beer event has been announced, so I think it's more of a... I think it was like Hops and Barbecue or something like that.
Oh,
so,
yeah. I think I saw that sign when I was in Atlanta the other
day.
Or
Hogs and Hops is what it is. So I'm a big fan of barbecue, and I'm a big fan of beer. So.
Yeah, I think it's that one we went to last year down on Atlantic Station.
I thought that was the Beer and Bourbon Fest.
Yeah, but I think it's in the same location. I don't know if it's the same company or not, but yeah, it's also at Atlantic Station under the tents. I remember seeing the big banner for it when I was downtown last. So we may have to check that out.
I haven't been down, you know, ventured that way since... Well, shit, I guess since we were at a freaking Contagion or whatever at Atlantic City. So it's been, what, a year and a half?
Probably.
2 years?
Yeah, because they didn't do that last year.
Yeah, so. Perfect. Well, all around, very good beer. Me, personally, I think I'm at a 5 on my untapped scale. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you on that. I mean, it's... Like
you agree way too much.
Yeah, because I don't want to think.
I can't think. It's like our fourth Beer 30 segment in 30 minutes. Maybe not, but so.
Yeah, I'm liking you. I don't drink a whole lot of the Belgians, but yeah, it's definitely a good example of a good Belgian. And like they said, it's, you know, blending a 500-year-old style with a little bit of fresh flavor, you know, adding the peppercorns and such. So, yeah, I do like their interpretation. I'm going to have to check out some of their other beers.
Absolutely.
All right, well, that will be back with whatever comes next. Science.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And we're back. It's time for some science. You ready to learn something, Brad?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to get my education on.
Look at the big brain on Brad.
The big beard, man. I haven't shaven in like 2 months.
Well, yeah. First thing on my list, I know we've talked about the Oculus Rift before, but there's a new headset device that's been kind of making its way around called the OSVR, open source virtual reality, pretty much. And their new system is, it's they've partnered with a company called Leap Motion to develop what they're calling the Razer OS VR HDK, which is Hacker Development Kit. And basically, this new version has got built-in motion tracking inside the headset. With, you know, the Oculus and other stuff, you have to have some kind of, like, controller. Like, you can't, it can't detect your body movements. I mean, you can look around and it'll look around with you, but as far as touching stuff in the environment or manipulating stuff in the environment, you're going to have a controller or some kind of glove or something like that. With this, it tracks your body's movement in the 3D environment, so you don't have to wear any kind of controller. It's all going to be built in with one unit.
Dude, this has taken Oasis from Ready Player One to a whole new level. Because even in the, you know, Ready Player One book for Oasis, which is, you know, basically the virtual reality gaming world, they had to wear entire, you know, outfits and stuff like that for
this is the closest we've had to anything like that, because it's going to be all in the headset. And this, apparently, since this Leap Motion is going to be kind of an open source, people are going to be able to use it with pretty much anything, not just this particular headset, but they've made adapters so you can actually plug it into you can buy it separately and plug it into the,
for like $20, you can Oculus plug it or, to the Oculus Rift,
yeah, anything else
dev kit, which, you know, I'm a big fan of anything open source. I mean, you put everything back in the developer and the community hands, so, you know, everybody gets a hands-on, you know, option. I think that's one of the things that really appeals to me more so with Android than with iOS, is the fact that Android being open source, once you get, you know, to super user, and being a big fan of Linux, Ubuntu, which are other open source software, you're actually getting to hear some of my geeky technical side come out. Really, really interesting. And it's really going to help the overall cost of things too, being open source, since everything will basically be, you know, free as far as developers. So if there's a feature you don't like or something you want, then you can just basically write your own developer code for it. And
yeah,
we'll have to worry about, you know, a whole bunch of software bundles and packages, things that you typically see with Microsoft and iOS.
Yeah, if you're not sure what open source means, that's like, you know, if you buy an Apple product, you have to use Apple approved stuff with it. With this, anybody can develop for this device. I mean, they're even talking about, you know, where you can 3D print these goggles at some point. I mean, it's going to be real easy, probably cheaper to get this in the long run. I mean, they're talking about the company, it's OSVR Open Source Ecosystem, and Leap Motion is the one doing the virtual reality tracking. And they say it's got zero latency 3D detection, so, I mean, it should be very accurate. And they're talking about shipping this developer's kit like in June. So we may actually have something like a consumer product by the end of the year.
You know, a prototype of this in action. I don't know. This is something that I've really dreamed of. I mean, since I was a kid, and I think the closest thing to virtual reality we had was the VR headset, the old, that you put on. It had a little cartridge, then had this little flip thing that went over your eye, and it would basically cast
virtual reality games were like a big thing in the arcades, but they were always like just very hard to play, and we had the old Virtual Boy from Nintendo.
Yep,
that thing would give you headaches, and it never really took off the ground. But this is, you know, like I said,
I'm a big fan
of the stuff I've seen with the Oculus doing, but this new system here, and they're talking about it being available, you know, by the fall of this year. So we may actually be able to get our hands on it sooner rather than later, and, you know, one step closer to living in a virtual reality where I don't have to deal with people.
You might still have to deal with people, but, you know, if you so choose to off one of them, then I don't know. I mean, in the virtual reality world, do we have laws and, you know, things of that nature, or is it, you know, certain zones or battle zones, or if you want to play it safe, then you can, you know, go to different worlds.
I just want to live in the Oasis. Next thing up on my list here, what's the one thing that everyone does on a daily basis?
I don't know about daily. I mean, sometimes my system gets a little off.
Well, as the old potty training book says, everyone poops. And now Mississippi State University, researchers there have patented an alternative diesel fuel conversion that will convert human waste to a biodiesel application. So we can, you know, we can actually make fuel out of poop now.
Huh. Interesting. So, you know, looking here, a typical family of four generates up to 400 gallons of wastewater per day and pays $435 per year, according to the National Association of Clean Water Agencies.
According to the EPA, we produce like 8 million tons of sewage a year. And this, with this new process, basically, if you know, if you've ever been to like a water treatment plant, they take the liquids and separate it from the solids. And then they add like a bacteria that'll break it down. And once the bacteria break it down, it converts it into this oily substance they call sludge. Well, with this new program, that oily, fatty substance is going to be able to use that as a diesel product. They're going to be able to convert it to something that we can actually use in any kind of like biodiesel vehicle. And this right here will actually lower the cost of your utilities, because now like cities or whatever is going to be able to sell this, what essentially is a waste product, to companies to produce fuel. So I mean it's going to lower your utility costs and everything else.
One of the articles I was reading is the cost of solar panels and stuff like that. There were actually some companies were coming out looking to find ways to make them more economically friendly for consumers. And I think a lot of times if you install solar panels, as long as you are generating more electricity than you're consuming, then the electric company will actually owe you, you know, a small amount of money for generating more.
So if you eat a lot of crystals and Mexican food, you could actually maybe, you know, get paid to poop.
Love me some gut busters.
I'm just worried about the smell, because I don't know, anyone who's ever, like, you know, had a biodiesel car, they kind of smell like French fries because they use that, you know, recycled French fry oil. So I'm really hoping the exhaust on these cars don't smell like farts.
Damn it.
I got a real shitty car, man.
It smells as shitty as it looks. All right. We're done with that.
Oh, come on. There's got to be another joke in there somewhere.
I'm sure there is. A lot of them. What's next on the agenda, my friend?
The runs. It's a whole new meaning. Skid marks.
So I guess instead of turbo boosters and stuff, I mean, you're just going to have a bad case of diarrhea and be like, oh, shit, I increased my horsepower by 30%.
Oh, yeah. Well, have you ever seen the movie Riddick? Or was it
As in
Black,
Chronicles of Riddick?
Yeah, the Chronicles, what was the first movie? Was it Pitch Black, I think it was, or whatever? But if you remember, Vin Diesel had the cool, freaky-looking eyes that he supposedly got in prison, which helped him see in the dark. Well, there's a company out of California, a group called Science for the Masses. They're kind of a crowd-funded biohacking developers. And they come up with all kind of cool science stuff. One of their latest inventions or research projects doing is a human night vision project, which is similar to what, you know, the surgery Riddick had in those movies.
Interesting. So basically they developed a, you know, combining this ingredient, CE6, with insulin in a saline solution, and then it's dropped into
chlorum E6, with the, like you said, saline and the insulin, and it basically is injected into the conjunctival sac of your eyes.
Conjunctival. There's a V.
Whatever. Conjunction, whatever the hell you want to call it. And
not
it,
a spaghetti junction.
It's absorbed into the eyes and creates, you know, it's not a permanent thing like Riddick had, but it creates improved night vision for, they're saying, you know, 5-6 hours. And they've actually done this on one participant so far, and it worked the first time it tried.
So I guess this chlorin E6, I mean, it's found in certain deep sea fish, enabling them to essentially find their way underwater in very low, you know, poor lighted areas.
Yeah, it's a kind of a natural product that that they found in a lot of, like, you know, deep sea fish where there's not a lot of, you know, light, and this actually causes increased light amplification of low light coming through the eyes. And in the test, people that had used it were able to see, recognize people up to 164 feet away in like complete darkness. And like other people without the control group that hadn't had anything, they had like a 30% success rate where they could recognize the pictures and stuff that far away. But with the guy with the surgery was hitting it, 100% of the time.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, that could be life or death during the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
I mean, 50 meters is quite a substantial distance.
Yeah. I mean, it's a long way off from a actual product. They've really only done one test on it, but now they're going to, start doing more tests and trying to actually get, stats on how much it improves.
It did say that the guy woke up, fully aware and everything else. And that his vision had returned to normal and no ill effects have been reported as of 20 days after the experiment.
Yeah, so it sounds pretty successful. If you look at the pictures, though, it looks weird as shit because they say when it's first applied, it turns your eyes black for a few minutes.
It almost looks like, you've seen both. They've got the whiteout contact lenses and then they've got the all black contact.
If you ever watch Supernatural, when they're dealing with the demons and their eyes go completely black, that's what it looks like. So it looks creepy as shit. They said that side effect goes away within a few minutes as the eye absorbs the chemical, and then you just look normal. But the effects last for several hours afterward. But when that initial injection just looks creepy. It looks like you've been full on possessed.
Very interesting, my friend. Something to look forward to.
And speaking of bad ideas, here's a cautionary tale for you science nerds out there, or people who may not have paid attention to high school chemistry. Recently, I think this was maybe last year, Jägermeister was hosting a party in a Mexican resort. And if you've ever put like dry ice in water for Halloween and made like the fog and stuff, they decided to do something similar by dumping liquid nitrogen into the swimming pool they were partying in.
Oops.
Yeah, because water in a swimming pool is not like your regular faucet water. It's full of chlorine. So
and other pool cleansing chemicals.
Yeah. So when the liquid nitrogen mixed with the chlorinated water, it created nitrogen trichloride, which is a poisonous gas.
So basically, long story short, we ended up sending 8 people to the hospital, leaving one in a coma.
There's video of this too. As soon as the stuff goes in the water, there's no more party in the pool. They're like, uh-oh, I think we need to start fishing people out of the pool. Like when someone picks up one of the waiter's tray, they had a waiter in the pool and someone saw the tray floating to the edge of the pool with no one holding it. They're like, something's wrong.
Well, one thing that the article says is it wasn't actually the liquid nitrogen that reacted with the chlorine.
Well, it's a combination. It created the toxic gas, but also when that fog
nitrogen
displaces the oxygen. So it's kind of like when you're using a fire extinguisher. That's how a fire extinguisher works, is it sucks pushes the oxygen out of the air, so there's nothing for it to burn.
Yeah, it looks like it pushed oxygen, like you said, out, displacing all of those molecules, and you're basically breathing straight nitrogen instead of oxygen.
Yeah, so only were they exposed to the toxic fumes, there was no... It pushed all the oxygen
about
out of
the only
pool
time
area.
You want to...
So
you
people
know,
that are in the cloud couldn't breathe.
I mean, about the only time you want to consume nitrogen is if you're drinking a Guinness with a nitrogen-infused...
that's, as I've probably said many a times, no good ideas start with Jaeger. And so this kind of solidifies my theory.
I guess it's a good thing that
there's
I
many a bad idea.
The Jaeger bandwagon. I mean, for me, it was Jaeger's okay straight out of the bottle for a couple of shots. The whole Jaeger Red Bull combo. Dude, just the combination of Jaeger and Red Bull in the same room turns my stomach instantly.
Like, I've had a few drinks that contain Jaeger that aren't bad, but anytime you're like, let's just drink Jaeger, that's usually a sign that the night is going to end badly. And with this time, I think it was no one died, thank goodness, but there was 8 or 9 got sent to the hospital. One guy was actually in a coma for a week, but everyone survived and they've learned their lesson to not... try to mix chemicals. Just go buy a fog machine if you want fog.
Yep. The guy in the coma was only 21. Not a great way to spend your 21st birthday year.
And with that, we'll be right back with Nerd News.
Stay tuned.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One Podcast Network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. We've got an extensive lineup for this episode, so with no further ado, let's jump right into it. Although I'm having a hard time getting over the Tales from the Crypt stuff, because that was just awesome.
The freaking Crypt Jam is just hysterical.
We'll touch a little bit on Marvel here, but this time we're going to go in a different direction. We're not going to talk about anything upcoming or anything of that nature. We're basically going to talk about 5-4 clothing and outfitting the geek who wants to wave their geek flag a little bit more discreetly. So if you're a fan of the dapper costumes, which, being a fan of steampunk, I really like the, you know, a lot of the dapper outfits and stuff, this clothing company is going to give you the opportunity to basically subscribe for $60 a month, and you're guaranteed like $120 worth of clothing, so you can look like your favorite superhero.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of like Loot Crate, but for clothing. I mean, they send you like an outfit, you know, like a full outfit once a month, pretty much. That's, now they're kind of themed it toward, you know, toward the different superheroes, but they're not like full on. You're not going to get like a full on Iron Man T-shirt. It's more of a Tony Stark or whatever.
A nice dress shirt, you know, maybe an overcoat or something. I mean, I don't quite know exactly what all it entails, but
Tony Stark dresses like a pimp,
My geekdom a little bit. Yeah, I mean, how often is it you can, you know, be a complete geek pimp?
I mean, if they come in size fat, I'll sign up. But yeah, most of that clothing subscription stuff I never can find in my size. But yeah, it's definitely worth looking at.
So, you know, I'm very curious about this, and you know, I mean, I guess we'll see everything from, you know, jackets with hero linings, and all kinds of stuff. So who knows?
It looked like a regular suit jacket on the outside, but you look at the lining, it looked like comic book pages. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, undercover geekdom.
So I guess, you know, you can go to the corporate party, you know, this way, and then once the party really kicks off in the late night, you know, switch it around and go, you know, straight up superhero.
You can wear your Loot Crate Nintendo tie with it.
There we go. Pair it with my replica Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. badge from last month's crate. So jumping next, I mean, we've talked extensively about Deadpool, the movie, and everything. Well, Ryan Reynolds has debuted the Deadpool costume, and I got to say, it looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like dead on what you see in the comic book, too. And the picture he tweeted out, too, is hilarious. I mean, he's like on a bearskin rug in front of a fireplace.
Paint me definitely like one of like your French girls.
Yeah, Deadpool would do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing that, you know, kind of, and you said it, you know, in the comics when we were talking about it off air, is, you know, in playing the video game, I guess they gave him a little bit more tone and definition in, you know, the PS3 version of the game and stuff. So it's kind of crazy because I look at it and I almost see, I'm like, whoa. It's a man in a leather suit.
Like, bring out the gimp.
Yeah. Ryan Riddle just straight up went, you know, sweaty, panting leather daddy for Cards Against Humanity players out there.
Yeah, I mean, he looked kind of a little bit skinny, but Deadpool in the comic book's never been, like, super huge.
Yeah, no,
dude.
I mean, I'm not talking, like, I think if Michael Bay got his hands on, you know, the film or something, we'd see Deadpool all roided up like we did with the Ninja Turtles. So, yeah, that's not the direction I would want to see at all. But
speaking of Deadpool, there was some info released today, and unfortunately it was – I had to, like, double-check my facts 3 or 4 times to make sure it wasn't an April Fool's joke. But they have confirmed now that the Deadpool movie is going to be full R-rated.
Yeah! Which I don't see how you do Deadpool – without the R rating.
No, it would have been, like, real hard.
Yeah, I mean,
because Deadpool is just, I mean, he's freaking Deadpool. I mean, you can't censor the man.
So, yeah, I mean, seeing, you know, Ryan Reynolds, you know, I mean, that's the only person I could see. I mean, much like, you know, you would think about Robert Downey Jr., and that's the only person I truly see as playing Tony Stark. So,
I mean, the only way you could do PG-13 is to bleep everything and then have him be the only one that actually notices the bleeps, because that would definitely be in the Deadpool, like, frame that, you know.
Yeah, definitely breaking wall, that fourth, like, wall there.
You know, what the fuck's all these beeps, you know? Like, no, like, what are you talking about? I mean, that's about the only way
you
could
like
do PG-13
Deadpool.
It'd be like
listening to an edited rap album. Yeah. It just isn't possible.
No.
Speaking
of Deadpool-esque weapons, you can actually buy a flamethrower now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's a company, it's xm42.com, I believe. Apparently, there's no laws against owning a flamethrower, so they have developed a civilian market flamethrower.
What was that in the continental 48 states, so, right?
California, you got to have a permit, and I think Massachusetts was like the only place it was like full-on illegal. Anywhere else, you don't even have to register it like a gun, and it... You know, there's no big backpack like you see the old, like, World War II flamethrowers. I mean, it's all a self-contained unit. Kind of looks... Remind me of the flamethrower guns from the movie Alien. It's, like, pretty much like that, but it shoots, like, a 25-foot flame. And, like, right now, they had a Kickstarter, and they got enough money to get the Kickstarter going. And so now it's not in production yet, but you can pre-order for, like, $600. You can have your own flamethrower.
I mean, which is great. I mean, we did a party to celebrate our birthdays last week, and that would have been awesome to get the fire pit going, as well as the woods and maybe a neighbor house or two. But hey, you know, I mean, that's just collateral damage. Another character that's really on my list of geekdom, much like Deadpool, Arrow's... Stephen Amell. Yeah,
I mean,
is going to play Casey Jones in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, which I thought is freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I love that character in the cartoons and the comic books, all that. I mean, in the original Ninja Turtles movies, like back in the 80s, that was a badass character. And of anybody that can pull it off, I think, you know, Arrow can pull that shit off.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the build for it and everything else, and, you know, the personality, I think, is going to be there, too. So, I mean, you know, Casey was always kind of that smart ass, but at the same time, badass. I mean, your stereotypical, what I would say, professional hockey jock. I don't know. I've only met one guy that, you know, was real big into hockey.
Mask.
Yeah. Outside of Jason Voorhees.
With a cricket bat.
Oh, man. Yeah, so many one-liners from the original movies. I'm going back. I bought all three Ninja Turtle DVDs that I found in, like, a collector's edition at Walmart for, like, $5 or something. So I was, like, the happiest kid on the planet. But another cool thing I thought about Ninja Turtles 2 is it has been rumored that we're actually going to get to see Bebop, Rocksteady, and Krang. So... You know, to see all of them on the big screen, I think, would be awesome.
Yeah, because that's one thing I always, back in the old version, when they did the bad mutants, where they had Tokar and Rezar, I think is what they called. I was like, no, they should have had Bebop and Rocksteady. That would have been way better than the mutants that we got in the second film.
Well, I'm wondering, too, you know, with Michael Bay and I wonder if they're going to try to change up Casey's origin story, or if they're going to try to stay true to, you know, more of the comic early... You know, movies and cartoons and stuff.
Yeah, other than the turtles looking, I think they were on roids. I mean, it kept the origin story at least similar to the established origin stories. With them being, because originally they said they were going to be aliens or something. They're like, scrap the idea and went back to them being, you know, mutants. But instead of it being like accidental, it was part of some kind of experiment they were working on.
Yeah,
still, so. I didn't watch it for a long time because I wanted to hate on reboots, but I finally watched it, and it wasn't bad if you didn't go in trying to compare it to, like, you know, the original material, you know, because a lot of that stuff that you get rebooted, you're so, you know, locked in hard on.
Yeah,
on
and that was one of my problems, you know, I think, in fact, I still haven't convinced myself to break down and watch the movie yet for that reason, because
it's like I finally watched
you know,
the RoboCop reboot, and it turned out to be
actually really happy with the reboot of RoboCop and everything. So I thought it was, you know, very well produced. Up next, you know, we kind of talked about this on a previous podcast episode, but Mad Max Fury Road, the official trailer has been released. And I got to say, man, looking at this thing, I mean, it kind of reminds me of Death Race a little bit, but it looks really freaking badass.
I mean, yeah, it looked like some over-the-top action, and like some, I mean, most of the trailer is some epic car chase, which, yeah, that's pretty much what you expect from a Mad Max movie.
Well, I mean, that's what you expect from that. You know, not a whole lot of dialogue, just a whole lot of action.
I don't know if you notice it not in the trailer. There's a part where he's, like, running from somebody through some catacombs, and you see, like, the original Mad Max car there being, like, worked on.
Yes.
It's like, so I thought it was kind of a cool shout-out to the origins.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it looks like Tom Hardy's going to do a badass job. You got Charlize Theron, who's playing the Imperator Furiosa?
I have no idea. And that, what I'm guessing is going to be the bad guy, some dude with this, like, gas mask, skull-type mask on that just looks freaking creepy as shit. So, yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about this one.
And almost looking at some of the characters and stuff, I'm almost seeing, like, the old renditions of Baraka and stuff in freaking Mortal Kombat when, you know, I look at some of the costume designs and stuff like that. But, you know, based on the trailer and everything, I mean, it's definitely piqued my interest. And I think his movie's coming out here pretty shortly, too. I think it's set to come out May of 2015. So, you know, we'll be able to check that out.
Speaking of movies fixing to come up, I also heard today that when in front of Age of Ultron, we should get our first full-length Star Wars trailer for the new Star Wars
movie. Yeah, I saw that too. I don't know, man. Nerd news, researching that on April 1st is a very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, I had to. Luckily, most of these articles we had beforehand, but yeah, a lot of news show come up today. I was like, yeah, we need to like triple check those before we mention them, because 90% of what we saw was April Fool's jokes.
On Stephen King, on his official website, you know, there's a big thing going around where he was directing or going to write an episode of The Walking Dead, and he's like, I'm not going to give away any spoilers here, but, you know, we're going to kill off three main characters, one of which carries a crossbow.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, Walking Dead, we just had the season finale of that.
Absolutely. And spoiler alert potentially here, folks. So if you have not watched, then you probably want to skip the next 3 or 4 minutes of the podcast. I got to say, man, you're really seeing Rick come into his own. Morgan has turned into an absolute badass.
Dude, he's like straight up fucking Jedi.
Did he go to
now.
Jedi school or something? I mean, just seeing him, like, you know, the whole time I see him, I'm thinking the Napoleon Dynamite line. Yeah, this one gang wanted me to join because I'm pretty good with a bow staff.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm looking forward to hopefully them showing some of his backstory of where he's been since the last time we saw him. Because last time we saw him, he was batshit crazy. And now he's like a fucking Shaolin monk nearly, whooping people's ass with a bow staff. And, you know, and Rick, too, kind of pulling it all together because, you know, for a while there, we thought he was just going to go completely crazy.
Well, I mean, I don't know, you know. I mean, we've definitely seen a progression of the characters. You know, we saw, you know, when they were in the governor's town and everything else, how, you know, the governor ran his civilization. And I was almost wondering if Rick wasn't going off the deep end and basically coming into a second version of the governor.
Yeah.
But, given the circumstances, do you go through life naive or do you take the risk and, you know.
That line he said was like, I first thought, how many of y'all am I going to have to kill to keep the rest of y'all safe? But he's like, you know, now he's like, no, you know, I just need to teach y'all how to survive. You know, you can't survive as the way you're doing. You know, he kills like some walkers that got. He's like, I didn't get these from outside. These were in your back doors.
I mean, what the
and they always
up
get
with,
in.
What's up with the Reverend? I mean, has this dude already been bitten or something? Or
I think
know,
he's just fucking crazy at this point. I mean,
because you saw him, you know, ripping up the pages of the Bible and everything else. And I mean, this guy has really gone off the deep end. Like,
yeah.
I was really hoping that, you know, what's her name was going to end up putting a freaking bullet in the dude's head when, you know, what is it? She's got the. Was it M16 or M4? What is?
Oh, it's like a tricked out sniper AR rifle or something. But yeah, that thing is wicked. But yeah, that and then the whole fight with Glenn and that that other douchebag.
Yeah, I was almost wondering if we weren't going to see the death of Glenn when he got jumped by the three different walkers after being shot.
We see him alive, but we don't know if he's been bit or not, so it still could happen. But yeah, I expected a main character to die. I mean, that's usually what happens on a season ending. So I kept waiting for, here, Daryl's going to die. Nope, he survived that. Glenn's going to die.
Yeah, I almost wonder with Daryl's character, if we don't see him, you know, somehow gravitate in his search, you know, for new people and everything else, if he doesn't somehow end up going back out west or something and we get, you know, the freaking, you know.
And the freaking wolves and that, like, booby-trapped walker camp. I mean, that thing was insane.
Yes.
Though that's apparently going to be the big bad next season, and yeah, they're... Or at least we think that's going to be the big bad. It may end up being like Terminus, where, you know, that was like the big bad and they killed all those guys in like episode, you know, 2.
Which I got to say, man, you know, that scene where, you know, they start playing all the music and everything and you see the walkers, there's that trailer open up.
Freaking walker rage.
And then, you know, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, basically you're herding walker cattle into these trailers. But, you know, my thoughts would be, if you got that one main trailer pumping out all the jams and stuff, wouldn't all the walkers just gravitate to that one trailer? Would they really go around back, you know, to the building to...
Maybe they got them trained like dogs, you know? There might have been music or something in all of them. I don't know. But yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. I was like, that's a neat trick.
So, I mean, we've got the zombie dubstep. We got walker raves. I mean, who knows what's in store for season 6?
Speaking of the number 6, we talked last time about them announcing that the X-Files is coming back, and now they've confirmed it's going to be a 6-episode miniseries, pretty much, so far we're getting. But they're supposed to start filming, I think, sometime this summer, and no release date yet. But from what they're saying, instead of it being... Theory is it's not going to be, like, an overreaching story, because I think the original writers was like... You know, we're going to tell these 6 stories, and most people are taking that to believe it's going to be kind of like the Monster of the Week format that they used to have, where, like, it's going to be, like, 6 self-contained stories instead of, like, you know, a big, you know, mythology arc. So I'm that's one thing I'm looking
forward to. So you don't think they're going to go, you know, kind of the route of, like, Agent Carter and do, you know, like, a mini-series or something just to see, you know, people's reception?
I think it's going to be, like, some of the non-mythology shows where it's just a... Yeah, 6 self-contained stories.
Which, you know what? I personally like that idea, just for the sheer fact that a lot of times I'm not catching shows in real time. I'm DVRing, so it's not uncommon for me to miss an episode here or there. And, you know, for some of the mythology shows, that could be detrimental to the storyline. I mean, you can miss one episode and then be completely lost by the time you pick up again. So, The last item here I wanted to touch on, you know, can't rave enough about the freaking book, but Ready Player One, you know, it looks like we've got an opportunity here for Steven Spielberg to actually direct a movie for the book. And, you know, this is going to be based on Ernest Cline's New York Times bestselling novel, and all of the 80s and pop culture references and everything else. I'm just wondering, you know, if anybody can pull off the licensing for all of the retro materials and everything. It's going to be, you know, freaking Spielberg. But
yeah, Spielberg has already been announced to direct. And Zach Penn has written the screenplay already. And from what I was reading earlier, he really partnered with Ernest Cline, and yeah, he had his input through the whole writing process, and he said even if there was something that he wrote that Ernest didn't particularly like, he said that he scrapped that and made sure, you know, he got the script that was approved by the original, you know, author to get as close to his book as we can, you know, other than having to get the licensing to all of this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean,
stuff.
You know, when we're talking about the licensing, I mean, I'm not going to try to give away too much of the book for folks that haven't read it, but, I mean, you get everything referenced from Donkey Kong to Lord of the Rings to Mighty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, there's several sections that are just, you know, basically recreating scenes from famous movies. So, I mean, if you remember the old Who Framed Roger Rabbit, or even... the Wreck-It Ralph from Disney, how, you know, that included a lot of other properties that maybe not under the original. So it's been done in the past. It's probably not that easy to do, but, you know, throw enough money at it, you know, it's...
Yeah, well, I mean, I almost wonder if, you know, we don't see folks start up a Indiegogo or, you know, some type of Kickstarter campaign, you know, some kind of, you know, crowdsource funding to... You know, maybe help with some of the usage or, you know,
if, I mean, but having Steven Spielberg signed on direct, that's probably going to loosen a lot of things up. Cause,
yeah, I mean, who's not going to want to say, what, you want to give this a let's do it. So, all right, folks. Well, that wraps us up for Nerd News.
Final thoughts on the cigar.
Final thoughts on the cigar is it was a damn good cigar. Down here, especially around to the last third or so, really started getting more of the peppery, you know, leather, some kind of almost chocolate espresso notes to it, if you will. But, I mean, from start to finish, this has been a phenomenal smoke. I would highly recommend this to, I mean, it's the peppery and the fullness of the cigar is not near, you know, some of the stuff that we smoked. It's not on the harsh side. I mean, this is something that I could probably smoke on a everyday basis and not get tired of it.
Yeah, this one definitely gets a recommend. Any other final thoughts of...
I mean, I don't know. I mean, fucking Tales from the Crypt was awesome. I mean, all the stuff that's coming out in Nerd News, even a lot of the pranks I've seen for... You know, April Fool's Day and stuff like that. I'm like, man, if only that could come to fruition.
it's pretty insane. And like I said, we've got some future projects we're working on that we can't really talk about yet. But there's some nerdiness in the works.
There's some rumblings about. So
we'll see how all that
turns out.
Something to
stay tuned for, and we will keep you folks posted as we figure out exactly what our game plan is going to be.
As always, you know, check us out on our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. Check us out on Twitter, at CigarNerdPod, and on Instagram now at CigarNerdPod. So if you want to see the photos of weird stuff I take pictures of while I'm out and about smoking, follow us there. Facebook, also the ESOPodcast.com, ESO Network. And for my quote of the week, as the Crypt Keeper said, now that's entertainment. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.